I'm trying. I'm trying. It's not like I'm not trying, Rohinski. I'm trying hard.
Live from Beit Shemesh and broadcasted around the world, you are listening to the From Entrepreneur Podcast with your host, Nahum Kligman. Interviews and advice from Jewish entrepreneurs from around the world. Listen, learn, be Masliach.
Welcome to episode 57 of the From Entrepreneur. In this episode, I interview Shalom Stark, who is the co-founder and CEO of Invoice Ninja, a software company that I myself used before I knew that there were From people behind it. It's a very inspiring story, how they went from zero users to over 65,000 active users in just a few short years with a very small team and without raising a dime of money. Really great story. Can't wait for you to listen to it. It's coming up next. Just quickly, a word from our sponsor.
You got a foot like a boss.
Looking to make more money? Do you sell services or want to earn extra cash on the side? Book Like a Boss is the ultimate software to sell services and book appointments. You get your own custom webpage, which includes everything you need. Book Like a Boss integrates with your existing calendars, sends reminder emails, is fast, secure, simple to use, and looks great on mobile. Visit booklikeaboss.com and get started for free.
Welcome to another great episode of the From Entrepreneur, and today I have the co-founder of a very exciting startup, Shalom Stark from Invoice Ninja. One of the things I really love about this product and how I found them is that I started using the software way before I knew that there were From guys from Israel behind it. And to me, that was just like so super exciting. I was using it for maybe a year and I really loved the product and using it. Then I forgot how I found out. I don't know if maybe it was from searching from LinkedIn. Not sure exactly how it happened, but somehow I found out there were From guys behind it, and it just like blew me away. And you know, I'm super excited to have Shalom on the show. So welcome, Shalom.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, so I mean, has it ever happened to you? You start using the software, and then you find out there's like some From guys behind it.
It happened to me actually once. Yeah, coincidentally, many years ago, there was a newsletter client, a newsletter agent called Mad Mimi.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and it turned out that Mad Mimi, the founder, or one of the co-founders, two brothers, Gary and Dean Levitt, who are fantastic guys. Gary ended up becoming my neighbor in Jerusalem, literally across the street, like, you know, almost front door to front door. I've been using them for a couple of years, and I thought it was a very, you know, in place of Constant Contact and MailChimp, right. Mad Mimi was a fabulous platform, very intuitive, drop and drag. I was, you know, I thought it was great, and then the coincidentally, you know, the Hasidic co-founder ended up being my neighbor.
That's crazy. That's so funny. That's true. Actually, I had Gary on this podcast earlier, and he is an awesome guy. And that, you know what? This probably is the first one that happened to me also, where I started using it before knowing that there's a From guy behind it. So you're right.
And we still use it, by the way. We use that for Invoice Ninja. We set out to our user base, our newsletters with, you know, bi-monthly or so with features and functionality and updates what we're doing. So we still use Mad Mimi.
Beautiful. So just, you know, I'm gonna give, before we get into a little bit more details, I'm going to give like just the 15-second pitch of what, you know, how I found Invoice Ninja, what I use it for. Then, you know, you could clarify if I got it right or wrong. But basically, I wanted to simply be able to create an invoice to send to a client that I could bill them and look professional all within just a few minutes of work. And I was able to do that even from a very early version, like I guess a couple of years ago. It was just worked beautifully out of the box, did exactly what I wanted to do. But that seems to be the main thing what you guys do, right? You make it easy for people to invoice people, collect billing, and report on it, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, that was really our goal. At the time, like I mentioned, maybe with Mad Mimi versus all the kind of clunky competitors, you know, I have a couple companies for many years, and I needed a solution for myself. You know, the whole point was kind of scratch our own itch, to solve our own problem. Mm. Of how to invoice somebody, it shouldn't take you, you know, a chunk of your day. You shouldn't have to become a bill collector to run a company. So that's really what we did. We built this platform to make invoicing, to facilitate payments. And then from there, we kind of expanded out to quotations, proposals, time tracking, project management. And there's, you know, different kind of technical dynamics as well regarding the hosted, self-hosted, custom modules. So, but the foundation was really to suit our own needs of invoicing. Small business, solopreneur, trying to invoice and simply get paid to, you know, carry on with his daily tasks, right. Actually work to make a living.
That's really great. I mean, and you know what, even with, you know, my software company, Book Like a Boss, it's the same story. You find it a niche, a pain point that you yourself needed solving, and then you went out to solve it and figuring that, hey, if you have this pain point, there are probably dozens of others.
Basically, yeah. You see, if I have a need, I can't be the only one. When I met my partner, his name is Hillel Koren. He's the CTO of the company. I'm the CEO. So I explained to him my idea, my own problems with business, with my small business, and the existing competitors out there. You know, FreshBooks, and I had tried FreshBooks for a long time, and Zoho Invoice for a long time, and several other ones. I even tried QuickBooks Online, and basically none of them. You know, they all work. You can make them work. You can hack them to work. You can kind of force them to work. But you know, it was kind of they're like a big square box, and you try to make your round peg fit inside of it. So you kind of had to hack it a little bit. So I explained to Hillel, here's the problem with all the competitors. Here's some really basic needs, some basic functionality. To give you a perfect example, accepting a deposit, you know, accepting a partial payment. If you're a freelancer, you're an independent kind of guy, and you want a deposit from a client before you start taking, before you start doing the gig, there was no solution out there to take a partial payment against the invoice.
Wow,
FreshBooks official solution was, okay, so first you set up the invoice with a line item for partial payment, and you put all the other line items at zero units, and then after they make the payments, you revise the invoice, delete that line item, and reset all the actual line items to, you know, to the ones or two, whatever units. It was like, it was a disaster waiting to happen, you know, and that was their official advice. And I was like, there's gotta be a better solution than, you know, trying to force expensive software to work correctly, you know.
Yeah.
So
sure.
When Hillel built the first the framing, even before beta, and I knew from day one when I saw what he had built, it was a home run from day one. I just knew immediately this is so intuitive. I said, "What do I click for this?" He's like, "Well, you know, you don't need to think where to click. It's all just in front of you." It was unbelievable, and I kind of knew from out of the box that it was going to be a major competitor on the scene from what he built.
Wow, that's awesome. And so let's get into that story a little bit, because obviously your accent is very American, but you're living in Israel, and Hillel is as well, right? So what's a little bit, where'd you guys grow up? How'd you, you know, when did you make Aliyah, and when did the company start?
Sure. So I grew up in Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
I'm an Ohioan by birth. I've been in Israel since 2002 for a very long time. I lived in Jerusalem for 10 years initially. And about 2006, okay, so back to it. So basically, yeah, I've been in Israel since 2002, right after I got married during Sheva Brachas. We actually moved to Israel immediately and settled in Jerusalem in Nachlaot.
Your wife is from Ohio also?
My wife is from Detroit. My wife is a Detroiter. Yeah, my wife is a Detroiter. We met at a Chabad house, Shabbos dinner at a Chabad house in Ohio. And what can I say? It's many years later. We're married with a lot of kids. We have 5 children, and we live in Pardes Chana. We were in Jerusalem for 10 years in Nachlaot, next to the Shuk, the market Machane Yehuda.
Wow.
And when our baby number 4 came, we kind of felt it was a little tight. It was a little tight living in a 60-meter apartment in Nachlaot, so we decided to move out. We moved up north to Pardes Chana, and it's just absolutely fabulous. It's just a beautiful community, beautiful weather, green, quiet. It's fantastic.
That's beautiful. So, I mean, what made you decide to come to Israel right away? Were you here in yeshiva or seminary before, or like what got you here?
Yeah, I was in yeshiva in Yerushalayim.
Which one?
Mayanot. It's a Chabad yeshiva.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, my wife at the time we had met at Ohio State at a Chabad house, but then she had graduated and she came to Israel to work. She made Aliyah actually herself. She made Aliyah and she was working for the Jerusalem Post newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I had come and I was in yeshiva, and we got engaged within a few weeks of me coming. So I was basically engaged while I was in Jerusalem for my time in yeshiva in Jerusalem.
Wow.
And that was a long time. It was 2001, and we got married in 2002. And Jerusalem was fantastic. You know, I don't need to tell anybody who's been to Jerusalem when it comes to having options of where to go for davening in the morning before you go to work, and having options for shiras and for bring-ins in the evening. And when it comes to chagim and Shabbos, and there is no place like Yerushalayim, of course.
Right.
Even like Sukkos, you know, our Lulav Shuk over here in Pardes Chana is cute, you know, but you go to Lulav Shuk in Yerushalayim, it's a different world.
It's one big Shuk in Yerushalayim. All Yerushalayim turns into one big Shuk.
Yeah, it's a different world. I miss Yerushalayim in a certain way when it comes to family and kids, though, and space, and we're very happy in Pardes Chana. It's a lovely community.
So
good education for the kids, everything.
It's a lot of Anglos over there?
not when we moved here. We moved here. We actually had a Google Maps with about 5 red pins in the Google Maps back in 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Six years ago. Nowadays, there's probably a couple hundred families at this point.
Anglos.
We don't even know anybody. Yeah, Anglos. We don't even know them all. There's so many Anglos at this point, we don't know them all. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Sounds like a beautiful community.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's about the town's about half from. The town is closed on Shabbat. It's a Shomer Shabbos town, right. And for the population of the town, it's about probably 50 to 60% Shomer Shabbos.
Beautiful. All right, so tell me about Hillel. How? What's his basic story? How'd you meet up with him?
So I can't speak too much for him, but so we met at a Shabbos lunch actually here in Pardes Chana. So I've only known Hillel for a few years, since about 2014 actually. I know that he was in Yerushalayim. He was also in Yerushalayim prior to moving to Pardes Chana. So Hillel also has a lovely family. He has a set of twins and then children afterwards. So his first two kids are twins, and he has two more since. So he's a family, four kids at home. We both work from home. Pardes Chana is lovely like that. You can have a nice home with a home office. It's a very spacious kind of area, Pardes Chana. So we both work from home, even though we're only about 1 kilometer apart, our houses.
That's great.
And his background is in full stack development. So he basically does it all, in short. He basically does it all.
And he's American also, or he's Israeli?
He's originally American, but his parents are English, and his wife is English. So he has both the English and American connections.
That's great. So yeah. What was the conversation? So you said you were working, you had another startup that you were working on, and Hillel was working where, and like how that first conversation by Invoice Ninja get started?
Sure. So my main business for many, many years was a very large tour company. It still operates. I still own it. It's called Shalom Israel Tours. And we are one of the largest Jewish tour operators in Israel, just across the boards, hands down, point blank. And I was one night driving home from Jerusalem, and I was thinking to myself about all the paperwork that I had to do. I was in Jerusalem meeting a group I think had landed. I went to a welcome dinner to give the welcome speech and to tell some bad jokes. And I was driving home, and I was thinking to myself, like, oh, man. You know, I have to like an hour of invoicing and paperwork. And I was just thinking to myself, there's got to be a better way of doing this. So I actually called Hillel, I think, from the highway. I was on highway number 6 heading north. And right. I explained to him the problem, my concern. And he's like, let's meet tomorrow or the next day, I don't remember, and have coffee. So we met in Pardes Chana, had some coffee, and we talked it over. And initially, he told me that he didn't like the idea. I think maybe the market was too flooded. There's too many competitors out there. It's not a new idea.
Right.
Ultimately, online payments is not a new thing. But then I think that maybe he went home and did some research and looked at some of the big competitors and realized that some of the big competitors stop innovating. In short, when a company becomes so big, and I think that happens a lot of times when startups grow so fast and become so big, and a lot of times they have venture capital, they a lot of times have to look at covering their overhead, covering the bottom dollar, giving a return to their investors, and meeting benchmarks set by board members, and they stop innovating. And I think that happens to a lot of companies out there. And when you stop innovating, so you basically stop meeting clients' needs because the market's developing, the market's innovating, new industries are coming online, new needs are being created. And if you stop innovating as a company, if you stop reacting to your clientele, so somebody else will. That's just the bottom line. So my personal opinion, of course, I don't want to slander anybody, but the big competitors out there stopped innovating, and we came into the market, and Hillel and I had a conversation. It was Hillel's idea, and I think it was the most brilliant idea of the entire thing. Was to make our platform 100% open source platform that nobody else out there was doing it. There was no competitor that opened both a hosted solution, a SaaS solution, invoiceninja.com. And also, if you're so technically inclined, you can take our code base and you can host it on your own server and have a 100% open source. You can modify it. You can build custom modules. You can do whatever you want with it. We don't, there's no, the licensing is very, very flexible. And there was nobody doing that. So in addition to, and also because I was very fortunate to be very successful in my tour company, that we could be 100% bootstrapped, self-funded. We don't need to answer any investors, and we had a lot of flexibility in that fashion.
That's fantastic. Actually, I didn't realize about the open source, but that's something that we're definitely going to look in for a book like a boss, because we definitely want to be able to offer invoicing and up our services for our users. So just for that alone, this podcast episode is worth it.
So I can talk about that for an hour, but I won't clear time on that. But I can talk about the open source world for hours and hours, but I won't digress.
Yeah. Maybe you could talk to my CTO. You guys could talk for hours about that, about open source. But that's fantastic. I mean, when did you actually launch the first version?
2014, February, March 2014, we went live with beta, which basically means we made the website live. We announced it to the open source community. That was in 2014. So yeah, we're in our fifth year. We're approaching the closing of our fifth year when it comes to the end of this year. Mm-hmm. It's funny enough, we made for ourselves a bunch of target goals for users, for revenue, for the company from the very, very beginning. We set for ourselves a bunch of goals. Actually, based on a conversation that I had with Dean Levitt from Mad Mimi, I had this very long conversation with him. He gave me a lot of his time and input, advice. And after this long conversation I had with him, I sat down with Hillel. We made a long 5-year goal. And we actually have met that 5-year goal, if not surpassed the 5-year goal, for our user base, for development, for revenue, for the whole nine yards.
That's amazing. That's beautiful. And you guys are still bootstrapped.
Well, at this point, we're a profitable company.
Right.
So we're a profitable company. So the company covers itself. Company's in the black. So I personally funded the company until now. At this point, though, however, thankfully, thank God, it is a profitable company.
Yeah. I mean, it is a big challenge with a lot of SaaS companies, including our own, bootstrap or take investments, and definitely bootstrapping for as long as possible can try to get to that profitability is the best. So you were never tempted, in taking an investment, saying, okay, even we got profitability, now we could take $10 million and really blow this thing out?
There's two or three challenges when you're trying to fundraise as a startup. And even though Israel's the startup nation and there's a lot of money out there, so what they call at different funds, at different venture capital firms, they have all these guys which are basically gateways called deal flow managers. Mm-hmm. Now, deal flow managers are basically like, the Stonewall secretary.
Right.
Exactly. Their job is to talk to as many people as possible and to let through as few as people as possible.
Right.
So people I found that once we went online and we were put on a few websites of Israeli startups, that they started contacting us. So we would get literally every single day, 2, 3, 4, 5 emails a day asking for meetings, asking for more information, asking for financials, which are just projections because there were no financials, at that time we just launched.
Right. Not
to digress, but funny enough, when we went online, one of the phone calls we got was actually from Square in California,
Wow.
Jack Dorsey's payments platform. And we had this phone call with them, with I think some of their executives, to be honest. Their profiles were pretty big guys in the company, and they were looking to acquire an invoicing company instead of building out their own. And they hadn't realized at the time of the phone call that we had been online for like 4 days or 5 days.
That's
so they
great.
Thought we were this company, Israel, an Israel startup. And they're like, how many users do you guys have? Like, yeah, we think today we have like 20 or 25 users. The crickets chirping.
That's great. That's a great story.
About 25,000 or 250,000, which was funny at the time back in 2014.
How many users do you have now?
About 65,000.
Say again?
About 65,000 users, active users.
Wow, 65,000 active users. That's amazing.
Yeah, we're very blessed. We're very fortunate.
Call it a vote.
I would say the success is 100% up to Hillel, not only for building a beautiful platform, but also for the entire direction of going to the open source community. And just to touch on it very briefly,
sure.
It gives you a few things. Because I really recommend people to do it. They're afraid if you make it open source, people will steal your work. It's not the case. Because you can put licensing in place, and if people want to steal, they'll steal no matter what. But mm-hmm. With open source, for example, if we put out a new feature, a new release, which we do every week or every 2 weeks or every month,
right?
And a new functionality, when you're in the open source community, so we have literally our platform is deployed across tens of thousands of servers, and it's tested across tens of thousands of servers within our open source community for 2 full weeks before we make it live on our hosted platform for our regular average Joe who goes to invoiceninja.com. So when it comes to quality assurance and testing, I mean, Microsoft, doesn't have 10,000 quality assurance engineers,
Right.
So people who find the bugs, and they not only find the bugs for us, they'll say, I found this bug and I fixed it for you. Here's the fix.
Wow.
So when it comes to quality control and development schedule, going open source, it has you can't put a dollar value on it. You simply can't. Hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of dollars annually. If your platform is embraced by the open source community. Not only that, but when it comes to feature development, like for example, our expenses functionality, the whole module that we have for expenses was built by somebody else. He's like, I love your platform. I'm a cheerleader. I love it, but I need it for myself, an expenses module. So I built it. You guys can just use it. You can offer it to your whole user base. So
wow.
We've tweaked it. Yeah, we tweaked it, of course. We fine tune it. We go through it. And that's happened for a few different things. Not always for features, but sometimes for improved functionalities. When it comes to a dollar value, quality assurance value, a development value, not only, you know, first of all, when it comes to gaining a loyal user base, when it comes to the open source community, if you treat them well, transparent and honest, it's returned.
Amazing. Tenfold. So that actually leads me to my next question in terms of because my question was, how did you get to your growth goals? Like, what were the secrets that you did? And was, I guess, this open source, did that help you reach your growth levels?
Without question. Yeah, without question. Our user base is maybe about 25% open source. I'm sorry, 25% self-hosted, which is via our open source community. Mm-hmm. So without question, you know, those freelancers, those solopreneurs, those entrepreneurs, those people are sending out invoices to their own clientele, whether they're programmers or graphic designers or for whatever reason they're in the open source community. You know, those people are using the platform, and there's people are seeing the Invoice Ninja brand.
There's no way to remove Invoice Ninja branding on any plan.
You can, absolutely, you can. We have a white label. It's $20 per year. $20 per year, which is, you know, $20 per year is a joke, but it's $20 right. per year to white label it. So you could rebrand it. The only limitation is that you can't resell it. We do have a reseller program. That's something else. But yeah, you can white label it, put it on your own server and use it to your own, for your own needs as much as you wish. If you want, you know, leave it branded, white label it as you wish. But nevertheless, that was instrumental for organic growth exponentially, without question.
Right.
One of the early pieces of advice that that Dean and Gary gave us was their referral program. For example, we have a referral URL for every account. You can, you know, link it in your email signature, like, hey, this invoice was sent using Invoice Ninja, and it clicks, and they'll get credit for the referral program. And of course, you know, it gains awareness for organic growth.
Sure.
Because we're open source, we're really the first big platform to be an open source invoicing platform out there. So we also got a lot of buzz for content, for articles being written within the open source world about online business tools, small business. So, you know, when you're the only guy in the game and you're not doing it as a side hobby, you know, it's a full, robust, dynamic platform, and you're the only one. So we got a lot of press coverage, which was very good for us as well. And we Sure. invest a lot in content and reaching out and partnerships. We have partnerships with Zapier, Integromat, PySync, and these are platforms which are amazing platforms, but basically instead of building out an integration, let's say I want to build out an integration with Pipedrive. So instead of investing the resources, the time, and the money in building out one integration with Pipedrive and then hoping nothing breaks in the platform, and then building out a second integration with a CRM, let's say HiRise or Basecamp, you know, mm-hmm. or building out integrations with, which is a lot of work for each individual SaaS tool you want to integrate with, you build out one integration mm-hmm. with just Zapier, or just PySync, or just Integromat, and then, you know, all the other SaaS tools in the world build out their one integration, and that we built one integration, and now with Zapier, we integrate with over 1,000 tools. They have over 1,000 apps on their platform.
Sure.
PySync has over, I think, several hundred. So our partnerships have also been instrumental as well, and they're right. very widely used. They're very yeah. widely used.
Yeah, PySync is relatively new. They reached out to us a couple months ago. You know, definitely integrate with them. Zapier, I think I told my team, I said, if you're not integrated with Zapier, then you're just not a real SaaS company.
100%. That's a very true statement at this date and age. 100%.
Exactly. So how'd you get to your first 1,000 users?
I would say, again, the open source community was so instrumental in our growth. And also because, like I mentioned, we're the first real open source full suite of tools platform, we had major traffic from Reddit. Mm. We really had a lot of buzz on Reddit and drove us a lot of traffic. Right. Open source bloggers drove us a lot of traffic. And then because we grew so fast with our open source community, that just their user base, who were probably for themselves, either looking off to get off of, you know, like FreshBooks at the time was $29. I think now FreshBooks is $39 or $40 or $59 or $69 a month.
Right.
Whereas at that time, we were $5 a month.
Right.
Now we're $8 a month, which is still a joke, comparatively speaking. I think that a lot of people are just looking for a more cost-effective solution. Any small business, any entrepreneur, the key to success, not to digress, is really managing your overhead. Because things can become very expensive very quickly when it comes to PPC, you know, when it comes to advertising on Google, or any other comparable platform, Facebook, when it comes to creating content for content marketing, when it comes to social media efforts, if you're hiring a third party to do your social media efforts, when it comes to even having a virtual assistant, having staff, when it comes to kind of offices that you buy or don't buy if you work from home, when it comes to all the tools, you know, if you add up between Mad Mamie or Constant Contact or MailChimp, and then you have either Pipedrive or Basecamp or some other third party, or using Streaks paid program, using, you know, I think the average company uses something between like 8 to 14 apps to operate their company. And if they're all 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 bucks a month, and it adds up to a lot of money pretty quick. If you're a solo guy, you're flying solo,
sure,
and you're trying to make a living, you know, if you're spending an extra $8,000 to $12,000, $15,000 a year on software, it adds up really fast. So if we came on, we came online with a solution, which we have a forever free version of Invoice Ninja, which is almost a full platform.
Right.
And if you want a little bit extra, it was only $5 a month. Now it's $8 a month.
Yeah, and you know that's exactly what hooked me. I don't remember where I saw it. I don't know if it was an ad campaign or something, but I signed up for free, and it was so good. I think, I don't know if you had a special or I got an email or something. It was like $50 for a year for the pro version, and I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? It wasn't even a question. And I signed up, and I still use, you know, I still use it to today. And I see, I get the emails every month or two or so you guys are sending out and you know, more features, building it out more. And it's really fantastic to watch. I mean, really beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. One of the things, because like I mentioned at the very beginning, we don't have to answer to investors. We don't have to answer to third parties. So we only have to answer to our users. And Hillel is very sensitive to this. When someone asks for something, he notes it. You know, somebody asks, this feature would be great. This functionality would be perfect for me. If a second or third person asks for it, he just builds it. And that kind of flexibility and that kind of, no big company can scale a platform that fast. Once you have tiers of management and you have corporate structure of management and middle managers and team managers, and you have to answer board directors, and they don't know, and they have to choose where we're going to invest our time, our resources, our money. You know, it's building out functions and features and reacting quickly to your user base no longer is on the front burner for most companies. And we're very fortunate that for us that we can still do so.
Right. No, that, for sure. And you know, there's no question. It's always better to have to not answer anybody and be able to make your own decisions. And, you know, as you said before, investors or the VCs, they have their own agenda and they want you growing quickly and, you know, putting all those levels in place, et cetera. But let me ask you, because also, you know, obviously I got hooked on the price a few years ago, but your pricing is still phenomenally low for the value that you bring. So what's the thinking behind that? I mean, you could easily charge, you know, three times what you're charging, and people would probably still be happy to pay.
Well, you know, this comes down to this is very subjective. It's a very subjective answer. But do we need to charge more money? I mean, is it necessary? You know, we don't have the overhead to cover. You know, a big company, if they have, you know, offices with a PlayStation room and ping pong tables and an omelet chef, you know, they have a big overhead.
Wait, you don't have an omelet chef?
Not yet. I'm working on it. But, you know, they have a lot of overhead. You know, when I mean bootstrapped, I don't necessarily mean bootstrapped that we don't have money, but I mean bootstrapped in that we don't spend money we don't need to. If we have extra money, we're going to put it into content. We're going to put it into marketing. Or, for example, right now, I have to mention this or Hillel will kill me. Probably within 1 week, I would say, 1 to 2 weeks, we're going to be doing a 100% relaunch of our Android app. There is a new Google architecture for building both Android and iOS mobile apps called Flutter. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean a lot to people unless you're very, very in the tech world, but Flutter basically is going to, we think and we hope and we're investing in, that it's going to basically be a game changer for mobile development. So we have these mobile apps which are really good, and we built them out originally to be full native versions to mirror the web app entirely. And we've gotten a couple of years now of feedback from our users that they don't really need a full native app that mirrors the web app. They need it basically as a complementary app.
Right.
So Google, you know, that you don't necessarily, you're not creating new clients and new invoices on your phone. You're accessing existing data and sending things out or referencing data on your phone.
Right.
So we're rebuilding the Android app from the ground up. Hill has been working very hard for many weeks, and it's going to go live in the next 1 to 2 weeks. On Android, and then
Hillel was building the app. He built the apps as well as the software.
So we have a fabulous partner. There's three of us: Dave, Hillel, and myself. So we have this fabulous partner named Dave, who's in Australia.
Okay.
We brought Dave on as a partner to build up the mobile apps. He did a great job building both Android and iOS.
Okay, you're scaring me for a second, because you know, at this level, he sounds like he's a machine.
No, so what happened was, so they built it out, and then Dave is doing mobile apps for a couple of years, and Hill's doing, so we had a conversation a few weeks ago, and Dave's like, I really want to work on the web app. And Hill's like, well, you know what, I really want to build the new mobile app in Flutter. So he just made, okay, for the next few months, we're just going to change positions. I'm going to do mobile, and you're going to do web. So yeah, Hillel did build out the mobile app, as funny as it sounds, and And we're very excited. He's been working, he's exhausted. He's been working like a madman. He's exhausted. And it's going to be ready in a week or two. And that's the kind of thing. Like we had one phone call. Talk about being bootstrapped and deciding where to invest your resources, time and money.
Yeah.
We had one phone call a few weeks ago, whether it was 3 weeks ago, I don't remember, 3-4 weeks ago. And at the end of the phone call, he's like, okay, that's it. I'm starting now. You know, that was it. There's no additional management decisions, no board meetings. There's no voting. We just said, that sounds great. Let's just do that. And then a matter of 3 or 4 weeks later, we have this new Android app being launched in, Google's most recent mobile architecture, which is going to be a game changer, we feel, for the whole, you know, mobile development world. And we can move quickly because of all these reasons, being sure. Bootstrapped, being a small team, not taking outside capital. Well, but I digress so much. We never actually talked about taking outside capital, but
right. So you didn't take. You said you funded it yourself.
So I funded it myself because of my other companies. Right. But initially, we were getting so many emails and so many phone calls from venture capital firms in Israel. And I started going to meetings. I went to 4, 5, 6 meetings. And I started to realize that these people are asking you for information. They're asking you to send projections, 5-year projections.
Oh, yeah.
Come to the meeting and they didn't even look at your website.
Right, right.
They all just want to be the first guy to have the meeting with the next,
startup, yeah.
Yeah, the next unicorn. And they don't even look at you. They don't know who you are. They just want to make sure they have the first meeting with you. After 4 or 5 meetings, basically stop taking meetings. Mm-hmm. Thanking people for the invoice, for your email. Thank you for your phone call. We don't take meetings from VCs anymore. That's just the bottom line.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I think we've taken one meeting with a VC, just cause a friend had set it up, but I'm definitely on board with that. I've taken with previous companies, I've worked with VCs, and when the agendas are not in line with the founders, it's just ends up being a big mess.
Yeah, it just becomes, it's like a factory. They need to see as every startup that comes in Israel before somebody else does. It becomes a big factory to get as many people in the door as possible. And for them, it's their job. You know, making meetings is their job. For me, I'm losing a day of my life. I'm losing a day of my business.
Right.
To come to your offices, and I'm well prepared. I can answer any question. And I'd say 100% of the time, they hadn't looked at my website.
Right. Wow. All right, so tell me about your team, because you said obviously you have the open source, which is fantastic. But so how big is the team? You got you have Hillel, you have Dave. Who does all the design? Because the design is absolutely brilliant as well.
Thank you so much. So the three full-time employees are the three partners, myself and Hillel and Dave. We're the partners mm-hmm. of the company. And we're the three full-time employees. We very much believe in the outsourcing business model. I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss. If you've ever read Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, of course.
A big fan of his general, his books are basically, 80% entertaining reading and 20% actual jewels of knowledge. But they're entertaining nonetheless. But we outsource as much as possible. So we have a fabulous graphic designer named Nick. He lives in Texas, actually. I've worked with him for many, many years. His company is called think4design.com. Four is FOUR, think for design. For many years, he does all of our graphic design, preparation for social, for our the graphic design and the graphics that we use for social media, every page and graphic and icon on our website. He even does the mock-ups, Hillel and Dave, for the mobile apps, for our design directions, user interface directions for mobile apps. Nick is fantastic.
You can see it's top stuff. UI, UX as well?
Yeah, yeah. Hillel really makes the ultimate decision for the user interface. Hillel built the app. Just to put that out there, he made every UI decision. He built the app. Nick really came later when we were building our front end website, and everything that goes along with all the marketing on the front end and social media and anything from the design world, not necessarily from the user interface world. He helped give inspiration for the mobile apps, but ultimately speaking, those decisions come to Hillel and Dave, and they've done a very good job with it.
Amazing. And what did Hillel do before this?
So he was a pretty senior developer at a publicly traded company in the U.S. He worked remotely from Israel. I'm not sure if I can say the name of the companies or not because he doesn't work there anymore. He's obviously a full-time employee of Invoice Ninja.
Right.
But he's been a developer his entire life.
Amazing.
He's built out mobile apps in the past. He has used to specialize in a language called Flex, which was a arm of Adobe.
Yeah, I remember Flex.
Yeah, he was a Flex specialist for many, many, many years. But I don't know if I can talk too much about his past employment because I don't know what kind of relationship he has about how much he can talk about past employers or not.
Right, I remember when Flex came out. It must have been 2006 or so, 2007 maybe. I remember it was like a big, huge thing. And we also, from my previous company, we hired a top-of-the-line Flex expert. But it seems to have petered out somewhat.
Yeah, I think it's gone.
I remember it was like the talk of the tech world, and I don't even know what happened to it.
Something's always happened that way. Also, like Ruby on Rails, it happens with languages. You know, that's the way it goes with the
Silverlight.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Perfect example. that actually ever was popular. I'm not sure if everyone was.
It was popular for like a week, I think.
So we have Dave in Australia. Also, it's the same thing. He really handles also, in addition to he built out the mobile apps for us from the get go. He also handles our infrastructure. So Dave really works very much. He's 100% responsible. For the server side of things, making sure that we can scale, that we handle our traffic, that we're always online. Our databases have redundancies to avoid data loss. I mean, Dave really is the pillars of the data handling and infrastructure side of the company.
Amazing. Yeah. And you said, did you say you don't spend any money on advertising, or you do now?
No, we don't. We never have.
Wow.
Because we never really, people when they take venture capital money, because if you have a team, if you have a platform, the only reason you're really taking money is because you're either spending too much money on your team and you simply need to cover your overhead, or you want to have an ad spend. You want to have a marketing budget.
Right.
I won't go into it because it's a very long thing, but we never needed to spend money on our team. We kind of slowly went from it being, 50% time. Invoice Ninja was our 50% time company, and it slowly over the years became a 100% time company, which probably wasn't until 2016 that we all became on it 100% of our time. So we scaled slowly, so we never needed to have big paychecks for everybody from day one. And because we had the open source community that became our massive cheerleaders, our massive, very loyal support group, we never had to have a massive budget for ad spend because we had this user base that has embraced us so quickly. So we do have, for example, I have somebody who does social media. And obviously there's a cost for that. That person gets paid for the social media efforts. Sure. We do have a writer who creates for us all of our blog content and third-party content also. So we are creating content every single week, 2 or 3 or 4 blog articles a week that are either on-site or third-party sites. Mm-hmm. When it comes to ad spend, no, we don't actually do ad spend. We do content spend and social media spend, but we don't do actual payments, pay-per-click or paid ad placements, no.
Amazing. And so tell me, how do you handle, 60,000 clients. I mean, we have 10,000 and we're just up to our necks in customer service. Being able to be responsive and everything that customer service. How do you handle customer service?
So this is a philosophical question.
Okay.
To be honest, I was on the phone with PieSync, who are fantastic people, by the way, just put out there, last week as we were finalizing our integration, which is live. Mm-hmm. And they said, so how do you guys handle tier 1 and tier 2 and tier 3 support? And I said, listen, if you need to have tier 1 and tier 2 and tier 3 support, your app is broken. It means your company's broken. You don't have tier 1 and tier 2 and tier 3 phone support for Gmail because Gmail is so intuitive. You should know where to click. You should know what to do intuitively.
Right.
Invoice Ninja, that's kind of the goal, is that you should intuitively know where to click. You should know what, if you want to do something, you're like, oh, it's just right here. If you have to have multiple tiers of support, you're in trouble.
Right.
So people do have questions for support. I would probably say 75% of our support questions come from our self-hosting community, who are asking questions about getting the platform set up on their servers, which are very technical questions. Mm-hmm. Of course, because people are dealing with, it's not a matter of where do I click or how do I do something. It's a matter, it's a matter of debugging a script or a code that you installed incorrectly. And the other 25% of our questions are probably advanced functionality questions, advanced features within our settings. Which you do a quick screenshot or you answer one or two quick sentences and they're like, great, thanks. They give you a good review online and they carry on. With the platform. We probably get every single day, not that many, subjective. We probably get every single day between 20 to 30 emails a day. So it's not hundreds. We're not getting hundreds of emails a day. 20 to 30 emails a day. And this is our full-time gig. Hillel's doing also support full-time as well. He's the answering very technical questions.
Right.
Very technical questions and at lightning speed. Sometimes I think he works too fast. I think sometimes he should take a break, have a cup of coffee. People can wait. People can wait 10 minutes. But because the way that the platform was built, the way that Hillel built it, and the way that Dave and Hillel support it, is that it's so intuitive and it works so well, the need for customer service is quite low.
What language did you write it in?
It's in Laravel, PHP and Laravel framework.
Mm-hmm.
That's so it's a PHP-based platform, right. And we have one, I wouldn't say struggle, but one thing that over the years we had been very, very aware of is to make sure that we always make sure that we're on the latest version of Laravel, which is a lot, which that itself is a lot of work.
Oh yeah. We just had it. We're still, I think we're at 5 and we have to get to 7 or something like that. We're up to 7.
Yes. And I think that you have to be very careful. It's a lot of work in short. It's a lot of work. Not to digress. It's
right
a lot of work.
That's what my co-founder, David, has been telling us. I'm like, why can't you just push a button upgrade like with WordPress? He's like, no. There's a lot of work in being able to upgrade Laravel, but we have to do it because there's just so many other features we can tap into with it.
We had one gentleman in our open source community that did it once for us, to be honest. I don't remember which level, but at one point he's like, oh yeah, I needed Laravel, 4 or 5. And so I just did it for you guys. Here you go. When it comes to resources, when it comes to quality assurance and having an open source community that really supports you, there is no dollar value to place on it.
That's really amazing. It's inspiring too. I mean, really, the whole story is inspiring. Of it, I'm just inspired. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
It's really, really great. I've been meaning to meet you guys for a while, and I think we should get together. Either maybe we'll come out to you next time you're come to Schleim or Beit Shemesh. We'll definitely take you guys out for lunch.
We're always around.
That's awesome. Really awesome. So we'll just end here, but like, what's the goal? Where do you see yourself like 5 years from now with the company, and like, what's the end game?
Okay. So this is could be a multifaceted question, because the technology itself, the invoicing world itself, the whole online world of small business apps is developing so quickly that I don't believe that these services are going to be services that you can charge for in the future. Just like people used to pay for email, and now Gmail and email is free. People used to pay for storage, and now Google Drive, and Dropbox to a certain degree, and certain things are free. So when it comes to invoicing, it also comes to artificial intelligence. For example, with Invoice Ninja, we have voice commands. Create a new invoice for Joe Smith. Send a reminder for invoice number. Whatever it is. So it's going to, and the way things are developing so fast with technology and new architecture, just across the boards for apps, I don't think that the long term future is going to be the freemium business model of where you have a very robust free plan and then for the premium features you can charge people. I think it's great for right now, but I don't think you're going to see this 10 years from now. I think 10 years from now that all of these things for invoicing and payment management and time tracking management and project management are going to be free services, and everything's going to integrate with each other seamlessly. And you're going to have real added values above and beyond customization, custom modules per company, or just simply new dynamics that don't exist yet in order to charge people. So right now it's a freemium business model. We give away a lot for free. We're not looking for an exit. I don't believe we'll get an exit in the near future, because just as the market, I think that for the near future, for the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to be simply to build our user base, what they call a lifestyle app, to have a very large user base of paying users.
Sure.
And continue to react to them, building functionality and features that they want. And to react what people tell us, and to react what the market wants, whether that goes more open source features of functionality, whether we start doing managed installs, which is one thing we've discussed. For example, if you wanted to have a self-hosted on your own servers, but you don't have the technical know-how, for example, that we would actually then do managed installs, just like hosting companies, they manage your install for your website, for example.
Sure.
So the long-term direction of the company 10 years from now really has to reflect where the SaaS world is 10 years from now. I don't think it's going to be where it is now. I don't think people are going to be paying for any SaaS tool 10 years from now.
Interesting.
I think it's going to be something where you're going to be managing the infrastructure for businesses, or managing the infrastructure for solopreneurs.
But that's not really scalable.
Well, I think that it is. I'll give you, let's say, I could be wrong, but let's say an example, for example, of SSL certificates. SSL certificates used to be very technically difficult to install, and almost no websites had them unless you had a real reason to do so.
Right.
And now SSL certificates, and they used to be expensive also, by the way.
Right.
Nowadays they're free. And if you want it on your website, you click one button, usually within your hosting panel, whoever you're hosting with, you click one button, they install the SSL certificate. It's free, and it required zero work on your end.
Right.
So I think that, and the same thing was for websites. I used to hire companies to build out websites. Nowadays you have, website builders.
No, I don't mean to make it easy. Wix. I'm saying to be able to make money profitably by one offering custom solutions, even you know, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, or small companies, that's not, I mean, unless you're charging an arm and a leg, how can you make that scalable in the future, so, even 10 years from now?
So the customization would be from the user side, not from the provider side. So if you look at, for example, a company like GoDaddy, GoDaddy is very, very good at making money. So GoDaddy, for example, is they want to sell you a domain. Now, they make you choosing the domain mm-hmm. name for yourself very, very simple. You can search around for domains, buy it, life is good, they set it up. But for them, you know, they're not manually setting up the architecture for you to host your domain, to host your website. You know, the frameworks in place. They created the front end for the user to do it themselves. So they might manage, all they're doing is managing their own servers. They don't care what you do with your domain. They don't care what you do with your website. They don't care what you do with your installation. So I think that when it comes to all kinds of apps, and GoDaddy's done this a little bit. GoDaddy has bought invoicing companies. GoDaddy has bought
Mad Mimi.
Yeah, there you go. Content managers. They bought project managers. GoDaddy, of course, was a very old website builder. So I think when it comes, I think that they actually would be a very, very good model, you know, like in an archaic way of what's going to be in the future. You know, they don't charge, you know, they charge, you know, for all their added value services. But ultimately speaking, if GoDaddy was just charging for the hosting, they should give you all the other services for free. So I think it's going to be that way for invoicing for like Google Drive or actually Google does it as well. Google gives you the Gmail for free. They give you Google Drive for free. They give you all the added value services for free. It's only once you reach a certain level of data hosting are they going to charge you.
Right.
So I think it's going to be that way actually for all apps, not only for Google, which is really storage.
Right.
They want your content. They want your storage. They want to advertise to you based on what you're doing. It's going to be that way for invoicing. It's going to be that way for payments. And also how you receive payments is going to become so customized in the future. So I think that right now a lifestyle app, growing the user base on a freemium model, getting people to upgrade is going to be the 5-year plan. And the 10-year plan is going to be to adapt to the technology of the market 10 years from now.
Wow, fantastic. Listen, Shalom, I really appreciate your time. I mean, we could probably go on chatting for hours.
We probably could.
Yeah, I love this stuff, but you know, got to keep the listeners happy as well. But, you know, definitely going to be in touch and, you know, grow our personal relationship together. You're definitely somebody I want to meet and get to know better, and your company.
Fantastic.
And I'm super impressed, super inspired. Thank you so much for taking the time and continued Hatzlacha.
Thank you for having me, sir. It was great.
Awesome.
All the best to you.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the From Entrepreneur Podcast with Nahum Kligman. We hope you learned something valuable and will share this with your friends. For show notes, archives of previous episodes, and more information to help you start and grow your business, please visit our website, www.fromentrepreneur.com. Listen, learn, be Matzliach.